This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. Thank you so much for tuning in today. The city of Sochi, Russia, is feverishly putting the finishing touches on preparations for the 2014 Winter Olympics. The opening ceremonies for the Games are set for Friday morning in Sochi, meaning they'll be broadcast in prime time tomorrow evening in the United States. But the Games have already been marked by controversy well before the first skiers have taken their runs and the first triple or even quadruple axels have been landed on the ice. Ongoing concerns about the threat of domestic terrorism marring the Games have led some families of Olympians to stay away from the Games, and disparaging remarks by Russian leaders, including President Vladimir Putin, about gays and lesbians have led to calls for protests and boycotts. But at the same time, the United States will send its largest delegation of athletes ever to the Winter Olympics. Gordon Hilton is professor at Marquette Law School, whose expertise includes both sports history and Russia. He joins us on the line this morning from Charlottesville, Virginia, where he's teaching this semester. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
As the Winter Olympic Games get underway, how important do you think they are in the context of Russia's place in the world community in 2014?
Well, I think the Russians certainly think they're very important. The whole post-Soviet history of Russia, at least the early part of it, was just one perceived national embarrassment after another. In a variety of ways, Russia is clearly back as a major world power, and this, I think, is an important way of emphasizing that point. At least the Russians see it that way.
Well, and I wonder if they're more important for Russia in terms of presenting its face to the rest of the world, or Russia in presenting its face to itself, if you will.
Well, I think it's important for both. I think it was important for the Putin government to prove that it could do this, even on what initially sounded absurd, to have the Winter Olympics at a warm water Black Sea port. It seemed crazy at first. But so I think it's important for Russia to prove that it can do this. So this isn't just putting on the Olympic Games. This is changing the climate. This is changing the weather. This is importing hundreds of thousands of tons of man-made snow. So I think this is Russia's way of saying that we can take on these monumental tasks and complete them effectively, both internally and externally.
And at the same time, in doing so, it runs a pretty significant risk, does it not?
Well, that's right. But I think the Russians are accustomed to taking risks.
I want to get back to the current games. But first, let's flash back some decades, in fact, maybe more than a century, and talk about the history of Russia and before that, the Soviet Union and the Olympic movement. Before they were an Olympic power, the Soviet Union had actually been out of the Olympics altogether. But before that, there were, if I'm not mistaken, Russian teams in the earliest modern games.
That's right. They were, I believe, original participant, and they certainly participated in the pre-1914 Olympic Games, I think without any particularly great success. But you're right. During the early history of the Soviet Union, the Games were viewed as a kind of form of capitalist exploitation, and it was not something that a socialist nation would support or participate. At least that was the official Soviet position. But clearly in the early 1950s, after the Second World War, in part as part of their larger Cold War policy, they decided not just to re-enter the Olympic movement, but to enter an attempt to dominate it, which they came very close to doing.
Well, and connect the dots for us. Why did the Olympic Games gel so much with what was their Cold War policy?
I think actually, ironically, the story really starts with Nazi Germany. And Adolf Hitler's realization that a successful performance at the Olympic Games, and I'm talking about the 1936 Games in Berlin, both to demonstrate that Nazi Germany could host the Olympics and do so in a kind of spectacular fashion with new stadiums and new facilities, and that its athletes would win dozens of medals, was a way, at least sort of metaphorically or symbolically, vindicating the whole Nazi experiment. And I think really the use of the Olympic Games as a kind of tool of international diplomacy really dates back to the 1930s. And so in the early 50s, the Soviet Union, I think, launches a kind of similar effort.
Well, I'm wondering if there's a parallel to be drawn, and launch is a good word here, between how the Soviet Union viewed the Olympic Games and perhaps how it saw the space race.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, The devastation that the Soviet Union suffered during the Second World War, 50% of the total casualties Allied and Axis were Soviet casualties. So there was both a matter of for national security to put out a strong face to the rest of the world, but also to prove that Russia had endured and had emerged more with greater strength from the World War II experience was very important for Stalin and then his successors. And I think you're right. This just fit into that kind of larger strategy of showing to the world that the Soviet Union had not just survived the Second World War, but it had emerged as a great world power. The space race, the Olympics, there were a whole host of things were ways of demonstrating that.
Along the same lines as the question about who the games are valuable or how they're valued today, both as seen by the rest of the world and as seen by the Russian population, we think of the medal count in terms of its propaganda value. But who was the propaganda directed towards? When the Soviet Union won, say, you know, so many medals in ice hockey, for example, did that speak more to the rest of the world or to its own population as a way of, you know, validating that, you know, we're on the right course here?
It certainly was a way of validating the acts of the government and the general policies in the Soviet era with the Soviet population. But I think it was also a kind of ideological statement that a socialist theory of sport could produce greater athletic achievement than a capitalist theory of sport. So I think this was not entirely just a matter of Mother Russia trying to reassert herself, but there also was an important ideological component to all this.
So then 1980 happens, and there are two significant developments worth mentioning. There is, of course, the U.S. Miracle on Ice hockey team at Lake Placid on U.S. soil when the great underdogs, the United States, beat this, you know, powerhouse Soviet Union team. And then the U.S. turns around and boycotts the 1980 Summer Games in Moscow after the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. How pivotal was 1980 to Russia in terms of its Olympic history?
It was a real blow to the Soviets, I think, that the United States would do this for what to them, I think, just looked like yet another kind of border protection incursion, their movement into Afghanistan in the late 70s. The idea that the Carter administration would link the Olympics to these questions of East-West power relationships, I think, was a great insult to the Soviets. And of course, as a result, they boycotted the Summer Olympics in 1984 in Los Angeles. So it really did, it meant for two consecutive Summer Olympics, the best athletes of the world were not all there.
Well, and so more recently, you know, since the fall of the Soviet Union, as you said, Russia has had its challenges economically and on the world stage. Russia has still had a fair degree of success in some areas in the Olympics. Have sports been a bright spot nationalistically, if you will, for Russia in the days since the Soviet Union has fallen?
Well, I think there are really two phases to this. In the immediate aftermath of the collapse and the dismemberment of the Soviet Union, the amount of Russian funding for sports declined fairly precipitously, and there was this large exodus of Russian athletes, particularly hockey players, to the West. So I think the whole Russian sporting establishment, it didn't exactly collapse, but it certainly suffered badly in the years following the end of the Soviet Union. On the other hand, over the last decade, with the resurgence of the Soviet Union, and particularly the involvement of Russian billionaires in the sports industry, not just in Russia, but around the world, there's really been a real resurgence of Soviet commitment, at least economic commitment, into the world of sports. But even at the low point, Russian athletes did quite well in the Olympic Games. In fact, something that fascinates me is that if you actually, for the last several Olympics, if you were to add the total medal accounts for all of the 15 former Soviet socialist republics, so what was once the USSR is now competing as 15 different countries, if you added all those medals together, it would vastly exceed the totals for the United States or China or Britain. There has been no fall off in what used to be Soviet accomplishment in the Olympics. It's just now divided between 15 countries, and while the bulk of the success is with Russia, Ukraine, and Kazakhstan have typically won in the neighborhood of 20 medals, And all the SSRs win something.
So let's flash forward now to 2014. And, you know, there have been contradictory reports in terms of the cost of these games, how much they're costing to put on. Obviously, President Putin is saying one thing. There are some accounts that the true number is many times his estimate. You were just in Russia not long ago. How are the games being viewed, you know, from an economic standpoint and from a national pride standpoint within the country?
I wasn't really there in a situation that really allowed me to form an opinion about the economic sense. But it's clear that this is a major source of national pride. In fact, one thing that struck me is that I don't know if you've been in the Moscow airport, but there are dozens of high-end shops there. And you wonder at first, who comes to the airport to buy jewelry, right? Who comes to the airport to buy these expensive consumer items? But I realize in a way that those airport shops are about showing to the world, at least as it passes through the Moscow airport, that this is a rich country. This is a country on the cutting edge of technology. This is a country that's sort of showing off, is telling the world we're back. And I think the way in which the Olympic Games are being portrayed in the Soviet Union is, as you mentioned earlier, it's largely motivated by a desire to convince the Russian people that Russia is back. Russia is a world power. Russia is a country that needs to be taken seriously by all the other countries of the world. So I think that Putin is playing this brilliantly as a domestic issue.
From an international standpoint, though, there seem to be some missteps. One of the stories that has gained the most traction leading up to the games in the West is Putin's statements about whether gays are welcome at the games. Is this an international misstep, and does it really mean anything to Putin within his own country?
Well, of course, this is an issue that is starting to divide the world. There is nothing really radical in the Russian context about Putin's position. And it is the traditional, I'm sure, if anyone had really thought about it, this was the way in which Russians have always felt. And it's a way, you know, much of the third world, Africa, certainly still feels. So I think it's not going to hurt Putin domestically. But I think there is the problem of Russia now looking like a kind of coarse bully to the rest of the world. And I'm not sure that this particular approach to crack down on homosexual activity, and particularly the publication of pro-homosexual viewpoints, to kind of link that crackdown to the Olympic Games probably was a kind of a strategic error, at least vis-a-vis the way in which the West is now perceiving Russia. It politicized the Games in a way that they did not necessarily have to be politicized.
Well, and what about the security concerns? What do you make of them? It's certainly not the kind of publicity I imagine Russia would want to be having for the games in the immediate run up to the games themselves.
I think that's true. Although for 20 years Russia has had to deal with sort of dissidents in Dagestan and Chechnya, so Russia has been living with Islamic terrorism for the last two decades. So I don't think this was something that they weren't aware of. I think what they're counting on is that there will not be any significant events, and that this will prove that not only can Russia put on an elaborate and impressive set of games in a bizarre location, but that it can make them entirely safe. Now, obviously, this will backfire if, in fact, there are terrorist attacks or the Black Widows are able to filter through. So it's a risk, but, you know, Putin's whole career has been that of a risk taker.
Would you expect these games come off pretty well?
I'm hoping they do. I don't have any reason to think. It seems to me the Russians are using rather extraordinary and even somewhat brutal methods to try to make sure there are no terrorist incidents. Just some of the stories that have been reported recently about their efforts to try to ferret out potential terrorists in Dagestan and Chechnya. So I have my fingers crossed there will be no such episodes. But of course, you know, we won't know until the games are over. The International Olympic Committee has done a rather surprisingly good job in cooperating with the Russians on these security issues. I don't think there's ever been a set of Olympic Games where the IOC itself has been as deeply committed to security as these games. So it's really like there are sort of two parties who are trying to make these games safe.
Well, Gordon Hilton, thank you so much for sharing your perspective with us.
All right. Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
Gordon Hilton is a professor at Marquette Law School. His expertise includes both Russia and sports history. Hilton is teaching this semester at the University of Virginia, and he joined us on the line from Charlottesville. Wisconsin will be well represented at this year's Winter Games. Sports contributor Howie Magner joins us with a sort of who's who of Wisconsin Winter Olympians when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.